This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone, and maybe you're in bed, because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store, like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up a little bit later on today, Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider from The Athletic, going to join us in studio. We'll get caught up with him on all the moves for the last week or so. Plus, looking ahead a little bit, including something that we are going to get into to start the show, which will be the draft, bigger picture, and where things stand after a couple of signings.
I gotta say, both the bump music is very loud and lasted longer than it's ever lasted.
I was looking at you. I was like, dude, am I hearing this?
A lot of it was like, we were looking at each other like, is Alex speaking quiet?
I'm like, this is loud in my ears. This is very, very loud.
Or is the music particularly loud?
Sorry,
you know what,
guys.
They wanted to get...
I'm blaming it on Mac. Mac's over there laughing his ass off. I'm blaming it on Mac.
Or Dusty. What the hell? You guys having like a party together after the show? We're working here.
I realized like 10 seconds ago, I was, oh crap, I got to turn this music down. This is probably killing their ears right now.
It was definitely, we both had the same
more
look.
More aggressive than normal.
Dusty's not happy with you.
Because I said we're having a party?
He's not happy with you. All good. Hope everybody's having a good Tuesday. We're streaming the show as always on video as well. Facebook, Twitch, YouTube.
Always fun.
You can subscribe. Be sure you do that so that way you don't miss either Fesco and Dusty, of course, Cody and Gold, or The Drive, and it'll be right there on the front of your YouTube page. But I do want to start big picture with the draft a little bit. Now that we've seen some more signings come through, and yesterday we discussed Juju Smith-Schuster, and you know, what does that mean, and should it change the draft plan? Hopefully it doesn't change the draft plan, but does it allow you to have more flexibility in the draft? And I think both things can be true. The one thing, though, like the idea that they can just take best player available, I don't know if I'm sold on that yet, because
until defensive
they
line,
they haven't addressed defensive line. Yeah, Tillery's a nice signing, but he's a Derek Nnadi type of replacement. Charles Minnehue's still out there. They haven't replaced him. They haven't replaced Turk Wharton. So the defensive line actually is not a scenario where you can just say, oh, we'll pass on that for best player available.
No, I'm yes and no, right? Obviously, they brought in Tillery, so that replaces the Nnadi replacement. Dana is still here. They obviously still have, like, and look, I think a lot of this would depend on your confidence level in FAU. If he is at least a rotational defensive lineman who plays way more snaps at defensive end this year, then I actually think there is an argument for best player available and you're not forced to take a first-round defensive lineman. If you're not a believer in him, he's kind of the swing guy in this case where it's like, well, you need at least one more. And with one single defensive lineman signing, I would say you make the argument of, then you're really not obligated to do anything. You have a starting five offensive line today, if you have to, and I would think that that would include Kingsley at left guard. Worst case scenario, Caliendo, who played left guard for you a decent chunk last year as well. You already had your left tackle, center, right guard, and right tackles. Okay. You have enough running backs to walk into a camp with if you want. You and I desperately want them to take a running back, and both think that they will. Because of the signing of Fulton, you're good there. Like, the only position you can even make an argument for that they have to draft sometime in the first two picks because they need them to play immediately is defensive line. My biggest fear is that they go into the draft. That appears to be the case. They only need a defensive lineman. And then they take some other project offensive lineman like Simmons or Connerly or one of these other guys and decide like, well, maybe he'll start at left guard instead of Kingsley. Or maybe we'll just develop him as a tackle and he'll be ready for Juwan the next year. And then you're trying to count on a second round defensive lineman starting day one from you, which could be the case. Sometimes second round defensive linemen do start day one, but sometimes they don't.
I'm fine with him taking a tackle still fairly high, offensive tackle that is, fairly high. But as it currently sits, the number one hole remaining on the team is defensive line. I mean, that's just very, very clear. They're set at linebacker. I think they're in pretty decent shape at corner, although we both think, yes, they should draft one at some point. Running back, technically, you know, if they had to go in to play a game tomorrow, running back is set, even though we want them to draft an explosive running back. Like, I positionally, if you go across the board, everywhere but defensive line, could they go into a game and I feel decent about where they're at? And so, yeah, I think right this second, if you and I were doing mock drafts like everybody else is doing, I would probably mock a defensive lineman to them because simply they don't have that need. They have that need. They don't have that area addressed. Now, look, if later in this week they go and they sign a veteran edge rusher or defensive lineman, maybe it changes my thought process. I keep using Amenihu's name only because we know him here and he had the numbers that he's had here recently. But pick any other veteran remaining defensive lineman. If they go and sign somebody, then maybe that changes the thought process.
Yeah, and it could. And again, we've mentioned, like, I went through the free agent defensive line list. It's not as fun as it was like 3 weeks ago when we did this, and we're like, look at all of these free agent defensive linemen. Ooh, so many available options. Look at all these choices. It's starting to get bleak. It's starting to be like, I'm not totally sure who that dude is. And if they sign one of these guys, I am going to have to look up who they are. Like, a huge chunk other than Charles Amenihu. Like,
it's one of the few names they still recognize out there.
Yeah. unless it's him or like maybe one or two other where you're like, I think maybe I've heard of that player. And I don't know if they're 25 or 34. And it's like, maybe. It's kind of that level of defensive lineman now. Not zero out there. There are still a couple of names outside of Justin Minihue. I can't figure out his market. His agent must have been way off on his figure.
He clearly a year ago thought he deserved an extension even after the ACL injury. And then the market once again has told him that's not what you're worth right now, man. And I'm sure think about in your normal job, right? Like if you believe you're worth something and someone by not doing it flat out basically tells you, yeah, man, you're not worth what you think you're worth.
That's not a nice conversation.
That sucks, right? Nobody wants to hear that. And so I'm sure there's a little bit of, pouting, if you will, that's going on. At some point he's going to sign with somebody, but maybe he says, well, then I don't need to sign now. Why am I going to, if that's what the money's going to be, that money's not going to be any lower in a month from now. If it's already taken the huge dip, we can't even call like free agency wave 2, 3, or 4 anymore. We're on like wave 6 of free agency.
Probably. We're down to the most of these guys are getting 1 year deals portion of free agency. Maybe there's a multi-year deal hiding out there for Aaron Rodgers.
If I'm him and it's clear that there isn't a multi-year deal, let's say that's the reason. Maybe it's the money. Maybe it's just the years aren't there. If it's only a 1 year, if you're him, even if you're upset that a certain team didn't value like the Chiefs, why wouldn't you come back here where you know you've had success? If it was another 1 year opportunity at, let's call it $12.5-13 million, and I could be low, but I don't think I'm not that low anymore. It's this far into it. I don't think it's crazy to think that he could only get a 1 year $10-12 million deal anymore.
I would have thought that was low before, but we've talked about this when we were addressing like other players in the past. Sometimes the market on a player is way higher than I would have anticipated. I would have never guessed that Turk Wharton would have been 3 for $54 million.
That deal looks still incredible every day.
Yeah, and some markets, and he sent out like a little thank you post, which was nice. Mm-hmm. And some markets have been lower. Like Charles Amenihu, I think the biggest thing for him, it must just be nobody thinks he can get through 17 games. That's got to be it. There's not a single team in the NFL who looks at Charles Amenihu and says, he can consistently win for 17 games. And be honest, he was on the field for a decent chunk for the Chiefs last year, but they still weren't a very good pass rush. It's not like he elevated them to some like super high level in the 6 games he played. Now he's coming off a major injury, and you and I both know we thought he was really good in the 11 games he played before that. But he has, in his last 5 NFL seasons, played 1 complete year. He is more likely to play less than 9 games than complete a year. So like, I assume that now, looking back at it, his market is so shrunk due to the fact that that man just can't be on a football field. And the Chiefs can afford a player like that, in my opinion, because you can still take a defensive lineman who comes into the rotation early. Technically, they could start four guys across right now. You just wouldn't feel super comfortable with it. And because Tillery and Chris Jones, you have your normal amount of like interior guys that kind of fit. But I think they're trying to set themselves up in the draft, and maybe they're just the one defensive lineman away. I think they're trying to set themselves up in the draft, Gold, in a way that they don't feel that pressure.
Well, yeah, like
because like they felt that pressure before, and I think it's when they make their worst picks, honest to God. When they have a position they desperately have, it, I think it's when they do their worst.
913-586-7965. Someone from the 816 says, why do we continue with the notion that the O-line is fixed when we signed a backup left tackle to start and lost your best guard? It's not so much that I think it's just fixed, problem solved, nothing to see here. When we were going through, have they addressed the need? They have addressed it. I have no idea if Jalen Moore is going to draft an offensive lineman.
They just don't have to in the first or the second.
I have no idea if Jalen Moore is going to turn out to be a really good left tackle or not.
I'm not sure.
But if we're just going through what we were discussing from a draft need, did they address offensive line? Yeah, they've addressed it. It doesn't mean like you don't have to like believe in the plan, but the notion that they haven't addressed it. The only thing they have not addressed this offseason is the defensive line. That's it. Everywhere else they've addressed, they've come up clearly with their plan. Doesn't mean they won't draft another corner or another wide receiver or another offensive lineman. No, but I think there's a difference in the conversation of like saying not being happy with what they did versus did they address it. In their mind, they addressed left tackle. And I told you, and I think Cody, you agreed, other than Ronnie Stanley, they to me got the best available option for what is a bad offseason to try to address your left tackle.
Yeah, they really, you and I, they don't have a long-term answer at either tackle spot.
Nope.
They signed a two-year deal. By NFL standards, it's a one-year deal. We've seen the structure. It is a one-year deal. They could bring him back for a second, or if he kicks ass, then they can try to make it a long-term solution. But they don't know for sure that it's a long-term solution. Juwan Taylor isn't a long-term solution. They're all locked up at guard, we think, if Kingsley can make that transition. And Brett Veach seemed pretty optimistic that the people internally think that case. I'm not saying don't draft one. I'm not even saying they, like, I'd be mad if they took one in the first round necessarily, other than my general feeling of I hate that the Chiefs keep taking first round picks and they're like, oh, we'll get to him in a year or so, especially in a year where I think they're going to need more starters than they did when they took a guy like FAU. But so, like, but yeah, I just don't think that they have to take, well, we better take this in the first round, or what if we get nobody who can start for us? Defensive line is the only position left where I'm like, do you have to take it in the first round? Do you have a choice?
Coming That's up in 20 minutes, we'll get to something Drew asked us when we were discussing Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, but it has to do with the rest of the NFL and some of the teams that are contenders or not contenders. That's coming up in 20 minutes. But let's pivot to baseball a little bit. We know we're inching closer and closer. A week from Thursday, opening day out at Kauffman Stadium, Royals, Guardians, Cole Reagans, of course, the opening day starter. And I had a fantasy baseball draft last night. We're getting close. We'll get to apparently there was a baseball game this morning. I had no idea.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know the baseball season started today. Nice job, Rob Manfred, on that one. But I want to talk about Jonathan India. We've gone through a couple players and what we're expecting here in 2025, what we expected out of Vinny, what we expected out of some other pieces with this team. How about Jonathan India? The big offseason acquisition, we all know the trade with Brady Singer and the Cincinnati Reds to make that thing happen. We had Jonathan India on the show a couple weeks ago, got to know him a little bit. What do you expect out of him? We know he is your leadoff hitter for probably 150-plus games this year. Set the tone, get on base, should help Bobby Witt Jr.'s RBI numbers as well, even better than what they were. I think for him, he's somebody that ideally, like if you're talking about ideal scenario, he's hitting the low 260s batting average, getting 10 to 15 stolen bases himself to try to get to second while Bobby and Vinny are up after him. And he's someone that probably is in that 90 to 95 runs scored range. That's kind of, from a statistical standpoint, that's to me a very good season and realistic season for Jonathan India.
I know there's a lot of people who would like a higher average guy as their leadoff hitter. And I get it. Like, right, in a dream world, your leadoff hitter hits 300 and has a 400 on base percentage or anything else that would make you feel comfortable with having them in that spot. My biggest expectation for Jonathan India is I want to watch this lineup and be like, well, that's a professional on-base getter. More than anything else he does. Last year, having to watch them cycle through available options in the leadoff spot. And to be honest, not good options in the leadoff spot where they tinkered and moved and couldn't get guys on base in front of Salvi, Vinny, and Bobby, who were all having really good years and being run-producing, middle-of-the-order bats. Like, again, they were all on pace for 100 RBI. I just want to feel like that's a professional leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
If I got nothing more than that out of Jonathan India, I would probably consider it a win. But because they traded their number three or four starter, depending on how you view it, in the lineup, I do kind of want to see a resurgence that if he's protected in a good lineup at a place that should benefit him, like Kauffman Stadium, gaps, double guy, I kind of want to see a resurgence back to closer to what he was his rookie year. Maybe not a 270, 380 on base guy like he was his rookie season when he won rookie of the year, but closer to that, like 265, 360, yeah. Be on base in front of those three guys all day long. And honestly, I think you're going to notice it immediately. For as much as they struggle in the leadoff spot, I think you'll notice immediately that he's
legit leadoff hitter is what he is. That's the difference. And someone said, hey, throw in the walk numbers. Sure. I mean, I just assume the walk numbers are going to be there. I mean, he was top 10 in baseball in walks, I believe, last year. So there's no reason to believe that won't be the case. The reason why I said, hey, I think you'd be happy with a low, 265, low 260s batting average is because, in his career, he has not hit above, you said he hit in his rookie year 270, but he's not been above a 270 hitter ever.
It was 269 or something.
Yeah, he's never hit above 270, and he's never stolen more than 14 bases. So that's why I think the range I gave you when we started this conversation for Jonathan India, like, hey, what's realistic? Can he get to, 10 to 15 stolen bases on top of that? Again, 90 runs scored. His on-base percentage, obviously, with the walks factored in. So that's where I'm at for Jonathan India. The only reason why some of these numbers are fresh is literally somebody definitely drafted Jonathan India because we're a Kansas City Fantasy Baseball League. Drafted him a little higher than probably should. I can't remember the exact round.
You took him?
I did not. I did not. He went off in my mind way too early. Like everybody's, you get
good for the walks category.
There's no walk category. But there's an average category.
Is there an on-base category?
No.
Oh, damn. Well, I don't even want a walk guy. Who cares?
Yeah.
Here are the four players.
Maybe we need to add that next year.
Here are the four players that had more walks than Jonathan India. Shohei Ohtani, Kyle Schwarber, Juan Soto, and Aaron Judge. End of list. Just four guys. That's the only people who walked more than he walked. He walked more than guys who are great at walking, like Gunnar Henderson or Bryce Harper or anything else in between. Honestly, what I kind of hope with him too, and this all just comes because, like, by all accounts, he's one of the most competitive people on the planet. That sometimes when you bring in like this fresh blood into a team that's already had a little bit of success, right? They made the postseason, they won a postseason series, they're hungry for more. Is what I also wanted of him is not for just him to physically walk, is that I want him to help the other guys learn it too. Bobby Witt Jr., as dangerous as a hitter as he is, should walk way more. Look at the guys I just listed on this list. Judge, Soto, Shohei, guys, Harper, guys who are dangerous hitters and could do damage to you at any moment. Vlad Guerrero Jr., they all walk more than Bobby Witt Jr. He should walk more than he does. And my hope is that Jonathan India becomes like more of a contagious part of this, like, we can all walk. We can all get on base together. And I'm going to guess with more lineup protection, they'll be more careful with Bobby.
It should help. Someone was like, hey, you're only saying 10 to 15 stolen bases on the text line for Jonathan India. Yeah, he's never had more than 14. What's the reason for that? I mean, in college, he stole 30 bags. That's just not who he's been in the big leagues. It's just not, whether it's reads, whether it's overall, I don't know what his speed is or anything like that necessarily, but
he's not a slow player, but he's obviously not like, he's not going to get a million steals a year for you.
He's never had more than 14. So that's why I said 10 to 15 stolen base range. Look, if he gets more than 14, great. That'd be a career high. That's
probably gravy.
I also wonder how aggressive he'll be anyway, knowing that you have Bobby and Vinny right behind you. Like, you don't want to get into the business of getting caught stealing when you're trying to get on base, not get on base and then get caught stealing. Defeats the whole purpose of what we just discussed. So.
A lot of times it's like if there's two outs and Bobby Wood Jr.'s up, go ahead and take that steal now. We don't mind starting Bobby, Vinny, Salvi the next inning. So if you get caught cool, then maybe Bobby Wood Jr. could knock you in. But that's all just positional. And he's been a leadoff guy, and this is what he's been asked to do. A lot of times you don't steal in front of those guys. I think it'll be fine. And look, they'll have him steal more probably because they won't want him to logjam Bobby. They'll do double steals. It'll be the Royals as an organization, and Bobby in particular, are really focused on stealing third. They think they can steal third more. So like India on second, Bobby on first, that might actually be where you see the India going to third stolen base.
Well, career high in stolen base would be really nice for Jonathan India. All right, sticking with baseball, I mentioned this in passing, that I truly did not know until our fantasy baseball draft last night that there was a opening day, technically, baseball game.
Yeah, the MLB season started this morning.
Yeah, it did, in Tokyo. Now, the scene was
like 5
cool.
a.m.
I saw highlights, like, in Tokyo, it was great.
Was
they had Shohei Ohtani.
They had two
signs
Japanese
everywhere.
Pitchers in this. It's starting for them, and another one starting today or tomorrow.
Yeah, there's two games. So it's the Cubs and the Dodgers. Dodgers won today, by the way. I truly had zero clue, guys. I'm not even kidding. I had no clue, and I'm guessing a majority of you listening, until you woke up this morning or saw something late last night, had no clue either. And it's great in Tokyo, right? The reception that they're getting there and the turn of the tickets are insane. They have 140 movie theaters that are airing the games in Tokyo. It's incredible. But boy, oh boy, it's March Madness week. You're having a baseball game to start the 2025 season at 5 o'clock our time, 3 a.m. Pacific, when the Dodgers are located, where the Dodgers are located.
Mm-hmm.
This is not like, it's stupid. I'm sorry. And this is not about like you can't play international games. The NFL second game of the year is going to be in Brazil.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's just
but it's
that
the second
the
pretty
first
close.
Game of the year I didn't even know was existing. And it's at 5 o'clock in the morning. They did this last year too, somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what country it was in. They did this somewhere and we almost had a very similar conversation. It's great from a international perspective and more Japanese players are in the league. I understand that. But I bet you if we truly got an honest poll of 1,000 people right now, I bet you 10% maybe actually knew there was a baseball game on at 5 o'clock this morning. And Fox didn't even take it seriously. Did you know the broadcasters this morning, Benetti and them, they weren't even in Tokyo. It was a remote broadcast. What a joke.
That's a little more common, unfortunately, in sports, and I kind of hate it. I hate that trend that is the broadcasters watch a TV rather than how much money do you have tied up in this game? No, if you have so much money tied up in this game, just send Benetti and the crew. Like, another few $1,000, $10,000, $20,000 is going to be a drop in the bucket.
How many yen is that, Cody? How many yen?
I don't know the conversion, okay. Unfortunately. The only time I look up conversion rates for currency is when I'm watching Squid Game and I'm like, how many won is that compared to US? I know. Uh-huh. I need to know exactly how much these people are playing for just a minute. I knew there was a baseball game. They've been heavily advertising it. You knew that there was going to be a game in Japan.
I knew they were in Tokyo. I thought it was just like spring training stuff.
Yeah. Look, the problem with baseball is that if you want to do these international games, and they do, they very, very, very much want to. Japanese baseball is huge. They have a huge untapped and like or potentially tapped market in so many countries because baseball's played. Baseball and basketball are more played worldwide than the NFL, right? I mean, baseball's played, sure. It's popular in so many countries, basketball even more so probably in that department. They don't have the space inside their schedule to do it unless they do it at the beginning. So unless you can talk them into reducing games.
They did do one in season and they played
this.
In London and because the time
but
difference
London
wasn't as crazy.
Is not as bad.
And the flight's not as bad for New York, obviously. But
yeah,
that was last year, 2 years ago, right? They played in London.
Like in a baseball season, they play 162 baseball games in about 185 days. If you're going to make them travel to Tokyo, come back, get jet lagged, do the whole thing, you almost can't do it unless you do it. It does, I will admit, even as a baseball fan, and I thought the scene was cool this morning. I watched a little bit of it this morning. Even if the scene is cool, the biggest problem really is that I don't think any casuals are interested in this because
correct.
Of the time difference problem.
5 a.m.
You almost have to make it inconvenient for the country who's hosting it so that at 10 a.m. I can watch it. But that's at midnight. I don't care. You almost have to make it inconvenient or you have to make it convenient for your normal audience. The problem is that are they trying to attract us to watch this game or to attract Japanese players?
It was very popular. It was very
it
was a success in Japan.
Yeah.
In that country, ticket prices were nuts. I mentioned they had over 100 movie theaters with the game. I mean, it was
the
talk
they're
of...
They're not trying to appease us. They don't care that it's on at 5 in the morning.
It really was the talk of all of Tokyo. Like, not even kidding. Some of the media coverage over there. But I just think for your sport, though, right, air quotes, America's pastime, that the first game of the year is at 5 a.m., and a lot of people, I swear, did not know this game was even taking place. That's all I'm saying. That's bad.
Do you think, I forgot to look, do you think that they had a lot of bunting up? It's technically opening day, right?
I don't know. Is bunting popular over there?
Well, I mean, you know, we're taking,
I don't know.
The American game there.
I don't know if bunting was there or not.
I get it. Like, I understand, like, sometimes it's hard because these sports want to grow and make more money, and it never feels like it's at the convenience of watching them.
So they play.
Right? Like, it's never at the convenience of the fan. It's never better for us anytime they do that stuff. But as someone points out on the text line, it really was probably more for Japanese viewers than it was for us. And look, it was cool because they had two Japanese starters. That's awesome.
Yep.
Tomorrow, they'll have another Japanese starter, although the other guy is going up against some guy from, like, a 300-person town in Georgia, like the opposite of everyone else. It's just like a funny mix. But they've got the biggest Japanese star in the world.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Otani. I mean, yeah, Otani, and then Yamamoto was the pitcher for the Dodgers today. They got the win. Yeah. I understand.
They're just trying to grow an audience.
I understand it's huge over there. I just think it's not even just that, hey, how dare you have a game internationally. That's not even what it is. It's the fact that if you're going to have it internationally, you should still find a way for the America's pastime to air at a time for most people to watch it and for a lot of people to know it existed. I understand you're saying there was a ton of advertising. I truly am not kidding. Drew didn't know about it either. Like, I don't think most people
realized it was a regular season game.
There was even a regular season game because they're playing two regular season games, and then we wait till next Thursday for opening day.
Yeah. They've done it 2 weeks ahead before. So this is even, or like a week and a half ahead. A week doesn't seem crazy early. Like, if you are trying to do this, the only other thing I would say is reduce it, because the only other way to do this is to convince two teams to do it right before the All-Star break. And you know how hard it is to convince a team, a player that has to play 6 out of every 7 days, they got to play 13 out of 14 days, they'll have a 22 in a day, a game stretch in a row in the middle of the season, be like, oh, by the way, you know that 1 week we give you off from baseball, and half of you don't even get the whole week, you know? Some of you got to go play in the All-Star game or do the other stuff. You know that 1 week we give you in the middle of all of this? We'd also like to fly you out to Tokyo, make you play. It's like, if you're going to convince players and teams and owners to do this, the only time to do it is now. They should, I think, if you and others, and most people aren't aware, make it way more clear this is the first game of the MLB regular season. But that's, I don't know how you sell that, I guess, necessarily.
The game was in prime time in Japan, right?
I'm assuming so. Yeah, the time difference, 5 a.m. here, I'm guessing it was probably 7 o'clock their time or something.
So
yeah.
I think the easiest way to do it is put the game on the weekend, have it air in Japan at, I don't know, noon or 3 p.m.
I'm with you.
In Japan, and then at that rate, we at least here, like the F1 race this weekend was in Australia, same sort of time zone as Tokyo.
Yeah, it's midnight in Tokyo right now.
Same sort of time frame as it is in Australia. F1, the race started at 11 o'clock.
No.
11 o'clock so here.
It's here,
3
yeah.
p.m. Yeah. there. So start the game at 3 p.m. in Tokyo, and then people in L.A. can watch it at 9 p.m. at night or 10 p.m. at night.
Yeah,
it's late,
14...
but they can at least watch it and feel like they don't have to wake up.
It'd be
in the
way better
to
make it prime time, but again, it's not for the American audience. It's to grow the international.
I understand, but if it's during the weekend, that's why you put it during the weekend.
Yeah. 14-hour difference, 3 a.m. in L.A. too for the team that was actually in the game. I mean, we're a bad example.
Would you wake up at 3 a.m. for the Royals to play the first game of the season?
We're a bad example because of our job and what we do. If I was not doing sports talk radio, I would not get up at 3 a.m. to watch the first Royals game. I'll just be completely honest with you. I would, because we need to talk about the game
at 10,
5 hours later or whatever, or 8 hours later. But
if Vern pregame at 6 a.m. hits way weirder.
I mean, in this scenario, if the Royals did the exact same thing, Vern's pregame would have been on at 4 o'clock in the morning, and the game would have ended would have ended like at 9 a.m. or 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
our time. We'd be reacting to opening day already. Anyway,
Vern would do his postgame and be like, "All right, I'm going to hand it off to Cody and Gold." You'd be like, "What?"
Yeah. Bizarre.
What?
Anyway.
This makes any sense.
Up next, let's get to a question Drew asked us in the middle of our contract discussion yesterday about the AFC. And one thing I believe is officially dead around college basketball. I'll tell you what it is.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews all on the app. Download today. If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals. But you're scrolling your phone, and maybe you're in bed. Because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
Next.
Basketball Madness comes to KC for the NAIA Men's College Basketball Championship March 20th through the 25th at Municipal Auditorium. 16 teams, 15 games, and one national champion. Bring the family for nonstop action and affordable tickets. Get yours today at NAIAHoops.com. We'll talk about some college hoops in just a bit, about 8 minutes or so from now. But yesterday when we were having our discussion about Cincinnati and right, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins get their massive deals, Drew, towards the end of the conversation, posed a question to us, which was, hey, well, who do you actually think are the five teams? If you don't think it's Cincinnati, maybe you do, but who are the five teams in the NFL we believe are closest right now to winning a Super Bowl, knowing the draft has not happened? So it got us thinking a little bit. We each put together the five teams. We'll ask you guys as well. 913-586-7965. I think we all have one team for sure on the list. Who is closest to winning a Super Bowl again? I believe I can say we all have the Chiefs still as one of the five, right?
Yeah, I think we could probably just discuss who are the other four.
Right. Sure. I think it's pretty obvious. How could you not still say, even if you're skeptical, that they're still not one of the five closest to winning a championship? They also still have some of the best odds to win the Super Bowl next year anyway. After that is where maybe it gets interesting. In no particular order, by the way. I guess I also went Eagles. Like, to me, that's a fairly obvious one. They just won one. We've all talked about the roster and how bloated it is right now.
They lost a lot of players, but they've still got a lot of guys on cheap deals. Still got Smith, Saquon.
So I think
Brown,
the Chiefs and Eagles. We all three of us have. So really, we're talking about the difference might be three teams. I then went with the Buffalo Bills. Okay. I still think while they haven't got over the hump, of course, of beating the Chiefs, 0-4, Josh Allen is. He did just win an MVP. They were actually in the AFC title game, right? And I believe in what was supposed to be a reset year for them, they made it to an AFC title game. And they had some more cap flexibility this offseason. I don't know if I'm all that impressed with what they've done with it to this point in time.
Because, again, there's a limit to how good of a job you could have done.
But it's very clear when you have Josh Allen, you're in the hunt every year. You just are. And I think even if you factor in the NFC, they still would be one of the teams, that the five teams closest to winning a Super Bowl.
I had the Bills too.
Okay.
I was between them and the Ravens. So now you know I don't have the other one, and I'll explain, I guess, why in that moment.
I had the Ravens, by the way, on my list.
Part of the rebuild year is a reason why I didn't end up there, is that I thought the Bills succeeded higher than they should have been expected to do, which means I think that they will be even better positioned again this year. They also, for all the other factors, and we can complain about this all we want, they play in the easiest division out of any team I'm going to mention on this list. They got the clearest path to immediately make the playoffs as a home team, at least in the first round of the playoffs, maybe as a bye.
Sure looks like
all it. All those yep. teams still stink. Unless something's going to change
Patriots,
dramatically,
maybe they get a little better. Work to do.
You got to believe Drake May's getting ready to take a huge step. And even still, even if Drake May got him to a 10-win team, it's still the easiest division out of every other team I'm going to mention here. And that's why I ended up with three NFC teams, too. I just feel like it's more wide open. So Chiefs and Bills are the only two AFC teams for me.
Okay, so I had Chiefs, Eagles.
Not the Bengals. Sorry.
I had Chiefs, Eagles, Bills, Ravens. You didn't have them, but I did have the Ravens. I still look at Lamar Jackson, what he's doing. I understand there's all these teams have flaws, like in terms of like, hey, they haven't got over the hump. But being close, I still think when you have Lamar Jackson, when you have the roster that they have, they're in that conversation of having, you know, one of the five best chances to get there again. And then I had the Rams, man. Matthew Stafford is back. That division, it looks like the Niners are taking a slight step back this year. Seattle's got a brand new quarterback. The Cardinals are just the Cardinals. Like, they're just there, right? Like, you know, they're a pain in the ass, but that's about it. And the Rams, I think, showed last year that they were able to effectively build up a defense again, at least on the defensive line. They need to work on the secondary. But post Aaron Donald, they found their next crop of pass rushers. They need to improve the secondary. No Cooper Kupp. I actually think that's fine. They bring in Devontae Adams to go with Puka.
That's a good
fit. So
I
believe the Rams still would be one of the five teams that are closest to winning a Super Bowl next
year. So my other two teams, or three teams, were the Eagles, like you had mentioned, that we all agree, the NFC side, Lions and Commanders.
So you still have the Lions.
I was between the Lions and the Rams. And for the obvious reasons you just mentioned, I think Devontae Adams might be a borderline perfect fit to go with Puka Nacua. Stafford, and I mentioned this with Aaron Rodgers, at some point, there is only one quarterback who has successfully played at the age really Stafford is. It's Tom Brady. I haven't seen another quarterback do it at a high level. Stafford took a half step back last year. Look, when he's on, he's still one of the five best quarterbacks in the league. He's on a little bit less than he used to be. There's some games where it doesn't look so easy anymore, and I still trust McVay. So I was on the fence, but I was like, you know what? The Lions have done this year after year after year. The only thing that would make me think that they're taking a half step back is not talent. Still got all the offensive guys, still got all the pieces in place, still got a lot of the defensive players in place. The only thing that would make me kick them off the list instead of the Rams is, do I think a Ben Johnson-less offense takes a huge slide back?
And Aaron Glenn on defense, too.
And Aaron
Glenn. They lost both their coordinators.
I'm more worried about Ben Johnson probably than Aaron Glenn, although Aaron Glenn did a phenomenal job. I'll give it to Campbell for now because he's been the head coach in charge this entire time and he's managed to make it work. So I gave them the edge. And then I put the Commanders because
I thought about it.
Young and high, and there's just all this potential in the world. And I think they got better in free agency, and I think they got better on the offensive line with Laremy Tunsil. So, like, they just kind of felt like the riser. And I felt like if I'm putting a list together, the five best teams positioned to do it, I kind of wanted a riser, in fairness. They're in a tough division, though, I'll say. That's the opposite of the Bills problem.
They were two teams away from me picking the having the Commanders on my list. They would be like seventh if we were extended out.
Would
like
you have Cincinnati ahead of them?
I would. Okay. Because my concern with the Commanders, like, I think we've all recognized Jane Daniels is the real deal, not questioning that. But I do wonder about a little bit of the sophomore slump.
Happens.
They were very, very fortunate, even if you talk to people in D.C., very fortunate in the ball bouncing to them, right? And that's something that you can't predict, right? And I think the fourth down stuff, while they'll still be really good at that, they converted at an exceptionally high rate.
Regression to the mean.
So there's just some of that. I'm not saying they're going to be bad. Their schedule is more challenging. They can be just as good of a overall football team, but their win total is going to come back to the pack maybe a little bit. And they're still dealing with Philly in their division. That's why I can't get to putting the Commanders as one of the five most likely teams to win the Super Bowl. What about Drew? Do you have the Commanders on your list?
I do. I didn't put the Bengals on this list because
stunning.
I would include them, but I wanted to remove them to come up with a list that did not include the Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, if you were doing a five, do you think they're one of the five most likely teams to win a Super Bowl?
Part of this was yesterday, Drew. You said, "Hey, do you think the Bills are better positioned to win a Super Bowl than the Bengals?" And I had said yes. And that's kind of what, like,
oh, well, then yes.
What made me think about this conversation. So, since he would be in your list of the five teams' best position,
yes, and I would take the Commanders out. I think because Gold said that he would include the Bengals ahead of the Commanders. So I think I'd take the Commanders out. But so my five, I guess, essentially would then be Eagles, Chiefs, Ravens, Bengals, Rams. Kind of wrestled with the Lions too, but I do think, you know, the point that you made, Cody, last in regards to the coordinators, we don't know exactly how things are going to go when you're dealing with Jared Goff, who had his best years with Ben Johnson. So kind of the same questions that
he had a pretty great year and moved to Super Bowl with McVay too.
But I know, but well, that also as well, like who do you have coming in, you know, to replace that sort of coaching that Jared Goff has had when he's had his most successful seasons? Kind of the same question people had originally with Josh Allen is, hey, Brian Daboll's gone. Is he still going to be good? Of course, Josh Allen still was. We'll see how Jared Goff is. I know that you can trust Matt Stafford, at least when it comes down to it, to deliver in that sort of a moment. Plus, as you said, Gold, I agree with the defensive side of things. Braden Fisk and Jared Verse were two outstanding picks on the defensive line. They're going to be right there in the thick of it as well. I think the Ravens, it's weird. So I think Josh Allen gets too much credit, and I think I've said that before on the show just throughout this past season, where I think the Ravens are more built for it just from a collective standpoint, even though they haven't been able to get to the bowl, I guess, in a similar
so
way.
So you have Ravens, no Bills.
Correct.
Interesting.
And I got the Bengals in there as well instead.
Is this – that's interesting. So you think Josh Allen is overrated?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
I think Lamar Jackson is better than him. I think Joe Burrow is better than him. I think Patrick Mahomes is better than him.
Well, I mean, yeah. And overrated, that's fair, because like overrated is relative because most people probably think he's the second best quarterback.
We've talked about it before. I do have Josh Allen as the second best quarterback in the league.
He's really good, but I think that to me, for some of the things that he didn't do in the playoffs, for instance, against the Baltimore, like I understand that they won the game, but if you look at what Josh Allen did, he did enough to win the game, but if Lamar would have won that game and he would have had the stat line that Josh Allen did, or the year that Josh Allen did, people would not be as complimentary of Lamar Jackson.
Well, that's a fair point. That is probably a separate convo, though, of just how people unfairly discuss Lamar throughout his entire career, right? That's just a bigger discussion. But
I think it kind of goes back to that in terms, and maybe it's hate, you call it. But I think that's part of it is, Josh Allen could make one outstanding play and have an okay game, but everybody would focus on the one play and say he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And it's like, you're not like this past year.
Josh Allen has been closer twice to a Super Bowl. He's been to two AFC title games and came up, you know, very, very close. Lamar has only been to one, right?
So yeah. I just think you have to, for like last year, Lamar Jackson was better than Josh Allen in almost every single category, including passing, but everybody acted like Josh Allen was having one of the best years of his career.
I guess, but why Joe Burrow? Joe Burrow's like career stats in the playoffs aren't like bonkers. I looked it up. He's got 260 yards a game, less than two touchdowns a game, averages about an interception a game.
I mean, if you want to go particulars, Josh Allen's never beat Joe Burrow in his career.
No, but you're talking post, but Josh Allen makes the playoffs every year and he gets to go deep into it. Not just like an individual
and a better
effort.
Defense and a better O-line.
Like,
it must be nice, you know?
Well, easier division. That is like that. I don't think
better GM maybe at this rate. I don't know.
Better GM. That might be the case. And look, positioning does matter. I'm just asking like, because you're right about Josh Allen's game against, I don't disagree with Josh Allen's game against the Ravens. I don't think he like looked particularly special in that game, but he found a way to grind out a win, and his career playoff stats are real good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he has 25 career playoff touchdowns to 4 career interceptions and averages like 300 yards a game. He has been a phenomenal playoff performer.
I understand. I think it's maybe just this past year where everybody was riding the coattails of Josh Allen. It seemed like so much where, if you look at the total season output of what he did compared to somebody like Lamar Jackson, it wasn't even close who had the better year.
Oh, I thought Lamar.
But everybody disparages Lamar.
We thought the MVP thing was a joke, right? I think all of us agreed that the All-Pro was Lamar and the MVP should have been Lamar. That part I think is fair. But interesting. So the five teams were similar on three of them.
Yeah, Eagles, Chiefs, we all agree on.
I would say Commanders are right there on the outside looking in.
That's true. Yeah. The only one I would swap out, you could convince me to take the Ravens out and put the Lions in. That'd be the only one that I would be talked into swapping when it comes to that. All right, let's get to college basketball, though, because we know the tournament actually starts tonight. We'll have a couple play-in games, 16 seeds, and then the game I'm excited for, and most people are, San Diego State, UNC, all the controversy around it. And we'll see, right? There's been,
continues to look just horribly bad.
It does. And the trend, of course, you know, there's a lot of times where a team that wins the first four game ends up winning their next game. Ole Miss is awaiting the winner of San Diego State and UNC. There's also NIT stuff that starts tonight. And then later on this month, there's this new tournament called The Crown, which I believe is going to kill the NIT. And you're like, well, who cares about both of them? And that's fine. But I'm just saying the NIT used to many, many, many years ago actually have a lot of legitimacy to it. And this year, if you look at the field and then you look at the field of this Crown tournament that's going to be in Las Vegas, you can tell which one is going to eventually overtake the other. The NIT is going to be dead in the next 5 years, if not sooner. The reason for that, teams that want to still play. There's some teams that just don't want to play in any postseason unless it's the NCAA tournament, and I totally get that. Ohio State opted out because the portal is happening at the same time. They need to change that rule to where the transfer portal is not happening during the NCAA tournament, during
That's
the NIT.
That's a crazy time to do it.
I'm guessing they're going to adjust that eventually. The reason why the NIT is dead, if you're playing postseason basketball and you weren't good enough to make the NCAA tournament, you're going to at least allow your players to make some money. And that's what the crown is going to allow. Even though it sounds stupid, a tournament name and all this, like what tournament, why does this matter? Well, the winner gets $300,000. You get to the semis, the team gets $50,000. So if you're a UCF, a Boise State, these teams that did not make the tournament, at least you have an opportunity for your players who maybe didn't make a ton of NIL money that year to go in, hey, go have an incentive to go win some money. You win the whole thing. You split $300K across your, 12-man roster or whatever it would be. So I think this crown tournament and the field is way more impressive for the crown than it is for the NIT, in my opinion. So I think the NIT, unfortunately, I don't know. I think it's dead here in a couple years.
Died today, huh?
Yep. It'll be no different than the CBI eventually.
That's kind of messed up when you think about it, because the NIT was like the only other postseason tournament I was regularly familiar with. I understand there's like the CBI, you know, E and
the
like,
CBI you have to pay to get in. That's what's crazy. Yeah. The CBI you pay to get in the tournament. Did you see the terrible situation that happened? The NIT really screwed up. So there was, for whatever reason, confusion back last night or two nights ago, I guess it would have been. The NIT invited a team and then had to retract the invitation. So ooh. South Alabama ooh. Got a call from the NCAA inviting them to the NIT at 9:30 on Sunday night because UC Riverside was locked into the CBI. They were told that they were 100% in. South Alabama was. The NCAA calls South Alabama back an hour later, says, oh, our bad. We don't have a spot for you. It turns out that UC Riverside was on both the NIT bracket and the CBI bracket. They messed up royally. And so then now they put out some statement apologizing, but this head coach told his team, hey, we just got a call. We're going to the NIT. They're all excited. Go! An hour later, he has to tell his team that.
Oh, sick.
And so it's like, that's messed up. That's messed up. That's a bigger F up than the NCAA selection committee not putting Indiana in or West Virginia in. You call a team, say you're in, and then have to pull back the invitation. That's a brutal look.
That's no good. And we've all had to like pull back an invitation before. It's not a good feeling anyway, but to a postseason college basketball tournament
this
for a program
head
like South Alabama
tells his team already they're in.
Boy, he jumped the gun on that. I bet he won't ever jump the gun on that again. He'll call a team meeting for the next
day.
Well,
in fairness, though, they told him he was. He asked him, "Are we in?" They're like, 100% you're in, coach." So he goes and tells his team, as he should. And then an hour later, they're like, "Yeah, we messed up. UC Riverside is actually in. We thought they were in the CBI, but they showed up on both graphics. Like the social media accounts for both tournaments had the same team."
Oh, whoops. Man. Oh man, that's brutal. That's absolutely brutal. I'd regret that so much. I mean, here's the truth, though. Do I care that the NIT dies? What the hell do I care? Yeah. Into the
way
fire,
back
I
when
guess.
It actually
I'm not
going to
watch
deal.
The Crown, and I'm not going to watch the NIT.
Yeah.
The NIT, for the longest time, the way I always viewed this tournament is this team who didn't end up at the tournament, they'd be the number one seed, and they'd immediately lose their first game because they didn't care. Yep. And some other team who was further down the depth chart, who actually wanted to fight for something towards the end of the season, was eventually crowned NIT champion. I always viewed it as like those teams that felt let down they weren't in the NCAA tournament, took the invite anyway, immediately lost, yeah. And then everyone used that as justification for why they shouldn't be in the tournament, and the rest of us were just like, no, they just don't care about that.
That's
anymore.
Why I think the crown can work, though, because there's the financial incentive for the players, at least, even if you're disappointed, if you're one of the one of these
teams.
Yeah,
that was cash.
And, sure. And the crown is pretty much all power, with the exception of George Washington and Boise State, I think, is all Power 4 teams. It's all Big 12, Big 10, and ACC. Any Fox TV partner basically got an invite for this field. But if you're a player, you're like, hey, look, I'm disappointed. We didn't make the NCAA tournament. I could still get a share of $300,000. Yeah, I'll play for that.
Yeah. I mean, that's enough. I'd play for it. Like, if you're a college player, I don't know why you wouldn't do the one. Why didn't the NIT just do a prize pool?
They might eventually. They like, might I mean, have if to. You want to. Because it's run by the NCAA
and
still.
You better do it. Well, they got $300,000.
But they're cheap. We know that for years they prevented NIL thing to happen.
Do you want the tournament or not? Just create a $500,000 prize pool and outbid.
I mean, the biggest.
It's got better name cachet. Nobody knows what the hell the crown is yet.
Yeah, it's brand
people
new,
still
yeah.
know what the NIT is. Yeah. Like, you can still outbrand them if you very simply just offer some cash. Honestly, just approve it now. Emergency meeting, $300,000, whatever.
Yeah.
So that we don't look worse than this overall, other random tournament. And the other tournament's way too late.
Yeah.
I'm going to be long
that's
gone
why
out of those teams.
A lot of teams said they're not. That's why K-State wasn't interested in playing, because if you're a senior, you're not going to play from a Power 5 school, Power 4 school. you got to get, you're getting ready for the NBA draft. And if you have draft talent, the NCAA, all they care about, of course, is the tournament itself. It's their biggest cash cow. They have revenue of more than $900 million of their $1.4 billion they reported last year all came from the men's NCAA tournament. I mean, it accounts for, what is that, 90% of their budget, or of their revenue, I'm sorry, from last year.
I mean,
it's everything for them, which is why people have said, like, if they really wanted to say, screw you, NCAA, you're just an event management company for the tournament. We'll have somebody else run the NCAA tournament. We'll just do our own tournament. We don't need to split revenue with
you anymore. Yeah, it's an event management company. Like, this is the whole thing. The NCAA is run. It's corrupt. But it's just like, and the UNC thing only further proves it. But it's just like, yeah, they were so late in the draw, Gold. You're probably right. They'll let the NIT die before they do a prize pool. It's a mistake, but that's what'll happen first. Oh, college basketball.
The whole controversial.
I'm excited for tonight, though. Like, I'm excited for tonight's
game. They got a good game. The UNC game is a big one.
And look, for some of us are sicker than others. Like, I'll watch even the 16 seed because I just like the fact it's the start of the tournament and even the tournament music and, like, all of it, the logos on the court. Like, all of it. Yeah. It's kicking off the tournament. So at 5:30 tonight, I'll watch a little Alabama State and St. Francis, Pennsylvania, or whatever it is.
Yeah, PA.
PA, there you go.
You can put a little juice on it. Just watch.
Alabama State is usually
because you can't be claiming you have. Yeah. Please gamble responsibly. Yeah. You can't possibly know.
No, usually I bet totals.
About St. Francis.
Usually I'll bet totals in that game. Like, I'll just take a first half under or something.
If you want to bet money line, do Alabama State.
They're 4.5 point favorites, I think. North Carolina's something like that too. 4.5, 5 point favorites against San Diego State.
I think North Carolina's
flight got in late. They had some flight trouble.
UNC is the perfect team where, just like Syracuse a few years, however long it was ago,
they barely
made it in, and they went to the Final Four, the Elite Eight as an 11
seed. VCU, first four to the Final Four. It's happened.
I'm just saying, from like a Power Four perspective, of a Power Four team that scraped their way in because of the committee being biased and having a conflict of interest.
Then they'll start winning.
Exactly.
I could see North Carolina beating Ole Miss if they win tonight.
NC State barely got in, and they made it all the way to the Final Four. It's just how it kind of goes sometimes.
Let's preset up this conversation because I already hate, they do this in college football too, so they're going to do in college basketball.
If they get killed.
If they win or lose, it has nothing to do about whether they deserve to be in or not. If they go to the Final Four, they did not deserve to be in. They did not earn their way into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, but I won't care about what people. I wouldn't care what people think, though. At that point, though, you know what I mean?
Sure, but like they didn't deserve. Like, well, this is why they deserved it. Nah. You don't get to use your lazy rhetoric. They did not deserve to be in the tournament. They did not deserve to be out of the tournament because of how they perform in this game. Yeah. They're unrelated.
Yeah, like I told you yesterday. Like I'm already especially now that we're on the Tuesday. I'm already sick of the At some point, it's like I want to stop here. And like I've seen it from Boise State fans, Indiana fans, West Virginia fans. At some point, though, I don't want to hear about it on Thursday. Still, I'm done with it. It happened. It sucks.
Oh yeah.
But I'm not gonna. The story's over. It's done.
It's not gonna ruin your enjoyment.
Governor of West Virginia wasting our time with a press conference, showboating up there, political theater, wasting everybody's time and resources when there's more important. I don't need you holding a press conference, acting like something's gonna change because the governor says that they got screwed.
I've already told you my thought on like performative.
It's a joke.
Fix a pothole or something. You know, work for me.
Fix a pothole.
Do some work.
By the way, if you want to join our Cody and Gold Bracket Challenge, if you were in it last year, just go on to CBS Sports and you can make your picks again. Fill out your bracket, I should say. Otherwise, Drew sent out some links. I know some of you are not getting them. You can try if you want. 913-586-7965. Drew will send you a link. Otherwise, I think you said they can search Cody and Gold on CBS's Challenge.
You can go on the app, and people said they haven't found it on the app. If you search Cody and Gold, you should be able to find it.
A lot of you have joined. Some of you, for whatever reason, your phone's not getting the link. I don't know what to say.
We'll try to send it.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I guess if you want to, you can. If you have Twitter, DM me send you the link there too.
Working on a little prize package, something we did last year. We'll work on something for the winner. Up next, though, let's talk more Chiefs football. Some of the remaining unrestricted free agents that are out there. Is anybody left you would want to bring back? And who could be the sleeper of the tournament? We'll tell you who it is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.